Hey, Ambar.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Let's focus on what we know about the construction noise and how all this drilling is affecting marine mammals and their habitats. What have you learned so far?
Well, I talked to Professor Jim Miller at the University of Rhode Island, who specializes in underwater acoustics, and he worked with colleagues at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution and Marine Acoustics, Inc. in Middletown, Rhode Island, and they put special underwater microphones, hydrophones and geophones, at different distances from the Block Island wind farm and recorded the intensity of the construction noise. To give you an idea of what they measured, steel piles were drilled 200 feet into the seafloor when they installed the foundations of the turbines. Miller said, in a nutshell, the noise levels didn't exceed the threshold for injury to marine animals, but larger marine mammals, like right whales, were a concern. And if they were traveling close by, construction would have stopped, and it did stop once this summer, when a humpback whale swam near the turbines and hung out for a good chunk of time during the last day of construction. So not loud enough to cause any harm, but that doesn't mean that marine mammals wouldn't respond to those sounds by, say, swimming away from it. Miller said behavior is different and not something that he's studying, but his colleague Robert Kenny is a marine scientist at URI, and here's what he had to say.
We still don't know what the effects will be on most marine mammals. Almost all of the experience so far with wind farms has been in Europe. And in Europe, they don't have big whales. They tend not to have very many dolphins. Mostly what they have is seals and harbor porpoise. And for the seals and the harbor porpoise, they found that pile driving chases them away. When the pile driving is over and the wind farm is in operation, they start coming back pretty soon after the pile driving ends.
So, Ambar, what else do we know already based on research that's been done in Europe where they have thousands of offshore wind turbines?
Really interesting stuff, I think. So Jim Miller, the acoustics specialist, said measurements were about what you would expect based on measurements from the European offshore wind farms, but there are important differences, like the one marine scientist Robert Kenny just mentioned about Europe not having big marine mammals to worry about. Also, our seafloors are different, and Jim Miller made some findings. Here he is.
So when we went to 3 or 4 miles away and then 6 or 7 miles away, the sound was still pretty loud, and it has to do with the water depths here, about 100 feet. And we expected the seabed to absorb the sound, and the sound wasn't being absorbed. It was basically being reflected, like down a hallway. So it's the difference of a hallway covered in tile or a hallway covered in carpet. And you could tell that the sound would be different in that hallway versus the carpeted hallway versus the, you know, with marble tile or something like that. And so that was a surprise.
So he was surprised because most of his research has been in deeper waters where the seabed does absorb sound. And he found the reason sound ripples farther here is because we have a much more complicated seafloor shaped by glacial deposits.
That's so interesting. And it makes me wonder what this means for the marine life. If the sounds are traveling farther than we thought, how can we be sure this isn't affecting them?
Miller says marine animals have ears that are adapted to underwater sounds, and fish are adapted to track the back and forth movement of water. And he said the bigger marine mammals, like whales and dolphins, are hardy. They use echolocation. And again, the sounds and vibrations they measured don't exceed the criteria for injury. The other really cool thing that came up in our conversation is that these special microphones picked up the sound of whales vocalizing. Miller says they heard lots of whales, including a fin whale, which is the second largest whale in the world. And they heard this fin whale vocalizing for about 12 hours, and now they're going to study those vocalizations to see what they can learn about why the whale was traveling in the vicinity.
Wow. So did construction stop for the fin whale like it did for the humpback whales?
No. So the whale didn't get close enough to stop the construction. Deepwater Wind had people monitoring for whales with binoculars on a boat, but that only tracks whales visually when they come up to the surface or close enough. So I raised a question to Miller about how well we're actually tracking whales traveling through the area, and here's what he said.
We're trying to develop acoustic systems that will track the whale, even if we can't see the whale. If the whale is vocalizing, then we could detect it. So that's a hot topic in our field, is to develop acoustic systems, passive monitoring, and tracking of the whales. So people are working on this, so we don't have to have people with binoculars on ships.
So Deepwater Wind had strict rules that determined its construction season precisely for these reasons. They couldn't build during migration season. They could only build in the daytime because it's too dark to track, to visually track marine mammals at night. So real-time technology will be able to tell developers one day exactly where the whales and dolphins are based on their vocalizations, and that'll open up options for when to build these projects.
Ambar, cables had to be put on the seafloor to connect the wind farm to Block Island and then Block Island to the mainland. What kind of environmental assessments were completed for this part of the project?
So Deepwater Wind hired a Rhode Island-based company called Inspire Environmental to do a range of surveys, fish and lobster surveys, surveys of the seafloor to learn about its physical features, so the type of habitats as well as the marine life at the site of the offshore wind farm and along the route of the cable. I spoke to Janine Boyle, who's a project manager for the firm. They used sophisticated imaging technology to examine the top of the seafloor as well as the sediment.
What do they do with that information?
So these images helped inform the final cable route. Here's Janine Boyle explaining why.
When we went down with the camera, we found that they actually had some valuable hard bottom habitat and were able to suggest that they reroute the cable route based on the results of our survey. So it was really an important survey. We were able to look at the entire cable route. We imaged about 200 stations in 2 days. And were able to suggest an alternate route relatively quickly after the survey.
So Boyle says it was probably more expensive to reroute the cable because it takes a longer path now to get from Block Island to the wind farm, but it avoided valuable habitat as well as a rocky one that would have been difficult to build on. They also learned that there was valuable eelgrass habitat where the cable route would have landed on Block Island, so they changed the location of that too to protect the habitat. The firm is going to continue to monitor the seafloor around the turbines, where these special jackup vessels anchor down, to see how that seafloor recovers over time.
Well, Ambar, this has been fascinating, but we're running out of time, so we'll have to leave it at that. Thanks for sharing this sampling of environmental information and what we're learning so far about the Block Island Wind Farm.
Happy to do so.
Ambar Espinosa covers the environment for Rhode Island Public Radio. For some images of the seafloor, visit ripr.org. I'm Elizabeth Harrison.